Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.
For all you elk hunters out there, chasing turkeys is basically the same thing. I know the reaction you just gave me, but don't knock it till you try it, and don't try it without OnX. The Hunt app will not only help you find new areas on public ground, but I use it to find out landowner info to get permission on private ground that I see birds on as well. OnX Hunt has a special offer for you. Use code CAL to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt and find more birds this spring. Hey, I just sat down with the owners and operators of Maui Nui Venison. They're on a mission to balance axis deer populations on Maui while giving back to the community and run a totally sustainable operation. For folks like me who want to get your own meat but aren't always successful, you can become a snack subscriber, get some axis deer sticks sent right to your door. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNui. Venison.com and use promo code CAL for 20% off your first order.
From Meteor's World News Headquarters in Bozeman, Montana, this is CAL's Weekend Review presented by Steel. Steel products are available only at authorized dealers. For more, go to steeldealers.com. Now, here's your host, Ryan Cal Callahan.
The animal rights group, PETA, that's People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, recently published what may be the strangest press release on the internet to date. PETA President Ingrid Newkirk announced her intention to bequeath various body parts to well-known figures and organizations. She's updated her last will and testament so that, upon her death, the clothing brand North Face will receive one of her feet, Elon Musk will receive a piece of her heart, and Donald Trump Jr. will get her spine.
What about the heart that you promised Tin Man, and the courage that you promised Cowardly Lion?
And Scarecrow's brain.
Why has Miss Newkirk decided to be the world's weirdest organ donor? According to the press release, she's doing it to, quote, ensure that she continues drawing attention to animal abuse and exploitation even after her death. Which, you know, drawing attention is what they do for the price of millions and millions and millions of dollars. What's more, each of her various appendages have a cutesy metaphorical meaning, like a gross children's book. North Face is getting her foot so she can, quote, give the company a kick in the behind for selling down and wool. Elon Musk is getting her heart because, quote, his cruel and deadly Neuralink brain experiments on monkeys, pigs, rats, and sheep indicate that he doesn't have one. And Trump Jr. will receive her spine, because if he had one, he might stop, quote, trying to prove his manhood by gunning down magnificent, unthreatening, and unsuspecting animals. The North Face, Musk, and Trump aren't the only beneficiaries of Newkirk's generosity. She's been donating other body parts to Westminster Kennel Club, the Governor of Alaska, and the King of Spain. She would also like someone to fry up her flesh, with onions, for a human barbecue, and saw off her other foot for an umbrella stand. Now, I know what you're wondering. Is it legal to send your body parts to your enemies, a la The Godfather? Unfortunately for Newkirk, probably not, at least not in the United States. The state of Virginia, where the Humane Society headquarters are located, only allows anatomical gifts for the purposes of transplantation, therapy, research, or education. I suppose Newkirk might justify her gifts as a way to educate her recipients about animal welfare, but I think that's probably a stretch. This week, we've got legislation, animals, and so much more. But first, I'm going to tell you about my week. And my week was pretty spectacular. Loaded the truck up to the gills, hitched up the Black Series and headed northwest to Glacier National Park country, stopped in some old haunts along the way, bumped into a bunch of great folks, and met up with a bunch of old friends. We floated, we fished, snort retrieved like a crazy dog. We collectively wrangled a pile of small children and a herd of dogs. We kayaked, we swam, we ate heartily. My turkey wing experimentation still needs work. I ran the wings in the sous vide until tender, then dropped them into a 350-degree beef fat and coated them in Korean-style barbecue sauce. I would say extremely tasty, but that meat was still a little springy, and I wasn't quite able to get the skin to crunch like I wanted it to. It's good to have goals, right?
Yes, Jeff.
Yes, Chef.
Yes, Chef.
Yes, Chef.
Yes, Chef.
Great.
Yes, Chef.
Oh, yes, Chef.
Yes, Chef.
The burgers I ran through the grinder were a big hit, along with the antelope ribs, which disappeared incredibly quickly. Then we seared, scaled, skin-on snapper, courtesy of probably Kimmy Werner or Steven Ranella, scallops and octopus poached in California olive oil and sea salt, then seared it in the paella pan until crispy. Three paella pans, all tasty. But the turkey thighs and Canada goose sausage really made people go, holy hell, I had no idea those birds could taste so good. It was awesome. We fed 20 people for dinner and probably just as many for lunch out of the paella night alone. And that giant pile of food was all done after a day of rafting and fishing for cold, clear water, cutthroat trout right there on the shoulder of Glacier National Park. Now, I have not been or attempted to visit a national park since I lived and guided whitewater and fishing on the edge of this particular one. I lived in the back of my truck or eventually a 1972 Terry camper trailer in my buddy's parents' backyard. I was pretty darn nervous to return. We had such great times then, and I just didn't want to see the changes. In fact, just driving anywhere in Montana right now kind of gives me anxiety. Why the hell would you build a house there and ruin this landscape just constantly rolls through my mind. Then stack on top of that anxiety the skyrocketing park attendance and reservation systems and all the rudeness that comes out of people who are attempting to protect, quote, their vacation from everyone else who's on vacation. And that's typically what makes me think of a really good house project to tackle on holiday weekends. Things are changing around Glacier National Park. The old West G, which in my day had character, has been homogenized into a bland landscape of cliche signs and kitsch. Kitsch is spelled K-I-T-S-C-H, and it means a term applied to art and design that is perceived as naive imitation, overly eccentric, gratuitous, or of banal taste. Now you know that. All of these signs, which are totally unnecessary, are in matching font and paint and could probably be found also in Branson, Missouri. It appeared that the local employee base had largely been replaced with tourism employees from all around the world, which I suppose injects some cultures and ways, and I'm sure it provides some much-needed economic opportunity in other ways. But, you know, it was a busy weekend, full of people, and I stuffed my pockets full of micro trash, pieces of candy wrappers, the always gross and horrid toilet paper, cigarette butts, and more toilet paper in a fire circle right next to a lake that someone decided to just leave instead of lighting them on fire because I suppose they didn't want to walk 5 feet to get more water to dump on a fire that they just put out, or, you know, break their back packing out that extra ounce of trash or so. Found random bits of clothing, fishing poles, fishing line. I did a pretty darn good job on being the trash hauling champion of the weekend, but I was outdone by my buddy's 6-year-old son, who said, "Hey, look what I just found." And he held up a gallon Ziploc bag full of Marlboro Reds and loose marijuana and half a pre-rolled joint. Yay! All that to say, gang, it was still totally worth it. The rivers and mountains and lakes were still there. It was still an epic landscape and beautiful and full of brush-choked grizzly bear holes and bright, clear cutthroat trout holes. Still a great place to adventure and get together with friends. I had a great weekend, and I hope y'all did too. Just do me a favor and pick up a little trash on your next celebration of public lands, okay? Okay. Moving on to the legislative desk. The Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife is asking for public input on a new wolf management plan that would downgrade the state's wolf population from endangered to sensitive within the boundaries of the state. This new designation would not impact the population's federal designation under the Endangered Species Act, and it would not permit wolf hunting. but it would acknowledge the incredible recovery wolves have made in Washington State, and it would give ranchers more flexibility to deal with wolves who repeatedly attack and injure livestock. The wolf population has grown from virtually zero in the early 2000s to a minimum of 216 wolves in 37 packs, with at least 26 successful breeding pairs. The latest models suggest that wolves have a greater than 99% chance of recolonizing the Southern Cascades and Northwest Coast by 2030, which is the only recovery region where there are no successful breeding pairs today. The plan would set a target goal of at least 4 successful breeding pairs in each recovery region before the population could be considered for delisting in the state. If you'd like to weigh in, search Draft Periodic Status Review for the Gray Wolf, or visit themeateater.com/cal. Comments will be open until August 16. Staying in the Pack NW, that's Pacific Northwest, I have some good news out of Oregon. Thanks to listener Ellie Gage for sending this one in. The Oregon legislature passed a bill that would restructure how Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife commissioners are selected. The previous commission makeup required one person from each of the 5 congressional districts, plus 2 at-large positions, one east side and one west side. The new statute bases all positions on the river basin regions. There will be 2 commissioners each from the northwest and west central regions, and 1 commissioner each from the southwest, north central, and eastern regions. The Oregon Hunters Association says this change provides greater representation to the eastern portion of the state, and ensures the commission will no longer be stacked with 3 or more commissioners from the Portland area. This bill passed as wildlife commissions around the country are being pushed by animal welfare groups to marginalize the perspective of hunters and anglers. On the surface, at least, this bill seems like it will have the opposite effect, which is good news out of the Pacific Northwest. The Atlantic Northeast is a different story. The New York legislature just passed a bill to end so-called wildlife killing contests. These contests usually target coyotes, and as we've covered before on this program, they're used to manage specific coyote populations that local residents believe are causing problems. The bill makes it unlawful to, quote, organize, sponsor, conduct, promote, or participate in any contest, competition, tournament, or derby, with the objective of taking or hunting wildlife for prizes or other inducement or for entertainment. Violators will be fined between $500 and $2,000. The bill makes an exception for white-tailed deer, turkey, and bear, presumably because harvest is limited to just a few animals per person. Interestingly, the bill does not make an exception for fish, so it's unclear whether bass tournaments and other similar contests will still be legal in the state. The bill passed both legislative chambers by wide margins and now heads to the governor's desk. In other bad bill news, the Massachusetts legislature is considering a massive bill that would further restrict gun ownership in the state. The bill is 141 pages long, so we won't be able to cover everything here, but it changes the definition of, quote, assault weapon to include all semi-automatic firearms capable of using a detachable magazine and including any one of the usual defining characteristics such as a folding stock. It then prohibits all ownership of those firearms without including a provision that would grandfather currently owned firearms or allow for any kind of registration process. The only exceptions to makes are for gun owners who owned prohibited firearms prior to September 13, 1994. The bill also requires all guns to be registered with the state and increases training requirements to own a firearm. If you'd like to weigh in, get in touch with your state representatives and tell them what you think. HD 4420 is what you want to comment on. Thanks to Mike Krause for letting us know about that one.
Now, a lot of you guys are familiar with the old hunting tradition of eating, you know, some organ, the heart or a chunk of liver off the first animal you kill. I had that when I was a little kid and it was a big deal. Organ meats were always prized by frontier people who knew the importance of getting a lot of different minerals and nutrients. And as often is the case, those guys were onto something because organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. And you can get the same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil made exclusively from regeneratively raised grass-fed and finished cattle. Heart and Soil's unique freeze-drying process means all those important nutrients are trapped in, ensuring you experience every one of the benefits of nature's superfood in a clean, convenient, taste-free capsule. Find out more at heartandsoil.co and make sure to use code MeatEater for 10% off your purchase. That's heartandsoil.co. Use the code MeatEater.
For all you elk hunters out there, chasing turkeys is basically the same thing. I know the reaction you just gave me, but don't knock it till you try it, and don't try it without OnX. The Hunt app will not only help you find new areas on public ground, but I use it to find out landowner info to get permission on private ground that I see birds on as well. OnX Hunt has a special offer for you. Use code CAL to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt and find more birds this spring. Hey, I just sat down with the owners and operators of Maui Nui Venison. You've heard that name before because I've talked about them here on this podcast. They're on a mission to balance axis deer populations on Maui while giving back to the community and run a totally sustainable operation. Now, it's wild axis deer, which is an invasive species, but this operation is monitored and observed by the USDA, and they can commercially sell axis deer. Last time I went out to Maui to hunt axis, I did not kill one, which is where Maui Nui Venison would come in very handy for folks like me who want to get your own meat but aren't always successful and still want to have something in the freezer or handy in the form of a snack stick that is as close to getting your own as you can get, which is what Maui Nui Venison is. You can become a snack subscriber, get some axis deer sticks sent right to your door. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's M-A-U-I-N-U-I, venison.com. And use promo code CAL for 20% off your first order. Moving on to the Wolf Desk. Biologists announced earlier this month that gray wolves are thriving at the Isle Royale National Park on Lake Superior. The report comes 5 years after authorities airlifted 19 wolves to the island chain in an attempt to save the dying population and try to limit the amount of destruction moose were doing on the island to the ecosystem. The scientists' annual report estimates that there are 31 wolves on the island, up from 28 last year. Said the wolves appeared to be forming three packs, with others wandering alone or in smaller groups. I know what you're thinking. This is an actual biology-based experiment. It's not a reality TV show. Yes, it's an island. It's about survival. And they do use the word alone. Very confusing. The moose total has dropped about 54% since 2019 to about 967 due to both disease and the wolves. This is good news for the biologists working on this project, but not everyone believes it was necessary in the first place. Moose first migrated to the island around 1900, with the wolves following close behind, and it's been a battle royale on Isle Royale ever since. Their populations rose and fell over the next 60 years, until a lack of genetic diversity destroyed the wolf population between 2011 and 2018. Biologists noticed this decline and shipped in wolves from Minnesota, Ontario, and Michigan to rebuild the packs. But moose and wolves aren't the only predator-prey duo to occupy the island. Lynx and caribou had the same relationship, but I don't see anyone advocating that we rebuild those populations. Plus, global warming means fewer ice bridges will form on Lake Superior, which means the wolves may someday wind up with the same genetic diversity problem they had in 2018. Even some of the park's biologists say they may need to import wolves every decade or so. Still, biologists would like to maintain the status quo because it offers a unique opportunity for research. Isle Royale is the longest continuous study of any predator-prey system in the world, and researchers have gained valuable insight into wolf behavior since the project began in 1959. Maintaining a healthy wolf and moose population might be worth it for that one reason. At least, that's what I think the researchers working on that project would say. If you're thinking this is all just craziness, keep in mind that when Lake Superior would freeze every single year, Isle Royale would then be connected to the mainland with an ice bridge, frozen lake, right? And that would allow these animals to, you know, exchange genes, get off the island. Kind of like that reality TV show. However, due to changing temperatures, global warming, that ability to get to the mainland just isn't there as frequently. Thanks to listener Andrew Whitman for sending us that story. Moving on to the Animal Attack Desk. A rabid beaver attacked a man earlier this month as he was swimming in the Connecticut River in Western Mass. The beaver reportedly attacked the swimmer three times, and the man was taken to the hospital with wounds to his arm and chest. The beaver was still latched on the man's arm while his friends helped him reach the bank. The Board of Health chairman declined to tell the media how the large rodent was dispatched, but he did say that police responded to the scene and now the beaver is dead, so draw your own conclusions. The man was immediately put on an anti-rabies regimen and he's recovering at home. Believe it or not, this isn't the first time a beaver has attacked a human in this area of Massachusetts. Another swimmer got jumped back in 2021 and he sustained lacerations from head to toe, had chunks of flesh torn from his arms and legs, a fractured finger on his right hand, and a lacerated tendon on his left index finger. According to the YouTube channel Mike's Videos of Beavers, which I encourage you to check out, and trust me, it's safe for children, a beaver can gnaw through a 6-inch diameter tree in about 10 minutes. If you'd like to see for yourself, you can watch the whole thing on Mike's Videos of Beavers. I'd be real careful typing that one in. But again, you can imagine the kind of damage those teeth could do to a human arm. Not my kind of river trip. And the next time you're out there and you hear that big tail slap, a couple other things might go floating through your brain. Big thanks to Jerry Mee for sending that one in. Up in Oregon, a black bear attacked a man after being shot at twice for trying to eat the man's chickens. Craig Lankford told the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife that he shot at the bear one evening as it was snuffling around his chicken coop. He didn't know whether he'd hit it and the bear ran off. The next morning, Lankford went to investigate and he found a very alive and very angry black bear. He shot at the bear again and it still didn't go down. Instead, it went after him. Lankford suffered injuries to his head and arms, but fortunately for Lankford, the bear didn't stick around to finish the job. When deputies and wildlife officers arrived, they found and shot a bear consistent with Lankford's descriptions, and necropsy revealed bullet fragments from Lankford's gun. Though officials didn't say which of the two shots hit the bear or where it was struck, they did remind residents that wounded bears are the most dangerous kind of bear. Black bears rarely attack humans, but wounded and cornered bears will do what most animals do in that situation. Lankford is expected to make a full recovery, and chances are he might put a little solar-powered electric fence around that chicken coop, or invest in some solid bullets. Another black bear attack, this one in Arizona, ended on a much more tragic note. The Arizona Game and Fish Department reported on Facebook that a 66-year-old man named Steven Jackson was having coffee in a remote area about 100 miles north of Phoenix. A black bear attacked him in what appears to have been an unprovoked or predatory attack. Neighbors heard Jackson's screams, but the bear refused to abandon his victim, even after the neighbors shouted and blasted their car horns. Eventually, one of the neighbors retrieved a rifle and shot the bear, but it was too late. Jackson had already died of his injuries. This is the first fatal bear attack in Arizona since the 1980s, and officials are still trying to work out what prompted it. They said there wasn't anything at the site that would have encouraged the bear to hang around, like food, a cooking site, or access to water. As of this recording, officials are still investigating. For me, this is an insult to injury thing, because when I'm camping, one thing I darn sure know is exactly how much coffee I have. So to be attacked, thus spilling my coffee, would have been a real angry cow bear encounter. That's all I'm saying. Moving on to the Rhino Desk. Poaching continues to be a big problem in Africa, and rhino horns are one of the most sought-after prizes. To help disincentivize poachers, conservationists have for many years been sawing off rhino horns themselves. Without a horn, rhinos make a pretty poor target for poachers, which, the theory goes, helps ensure the continued survival of the species. Although those dehorned rhinos are definitely still alive, a new study out of the National Academy of Sciences suggests that they may not really be living. Black rhinos become less social and less confident following their dehorning, sort of like if you made someone attend a fancy party wearing nothing but a bathrobe. Would you still be able to have a good time? Sure, but you're more likely to spend most of the evening hiding in the bathroom. Rhinos are the very same way. They don't like being around other rhinos if they're not wearing their best. Vanessa Duthay, the study's lead author, said, quote, "It's sort of like if you put a muzzle on a dog. They're not so sure of themselves anymore. They've lost their main defense and their confidence." Duthay and her colleagues observed 368 rhinos and concluded that the territory of a dehorned rhino shrank by an average of 45% or 4.5 miles. Male rhinos lost around 38% of their territory, whereas females lost about 53% of their territory. The good news for rhinos is that, like hair and fingernails, their horns grow back. The bad news is that poaching is so bad in some areas that conservationists have to dehorn rhinos every 18 to 24 months, and rhinos are still killed by poachers. The dehorning process leaves a small amount of horn behind, so sometimes poachers will kill one of the massive, endangered animals just for that small piece. Moving on to the mailbag. Listener Anna Anderson wrote in with what I thought was a great question about chronic wasting disease and white-tailed deer. She asked, quote, "If an animal is harvested in an area with known CWD, would the best practice for containing the spread be bagging the entire deer head and disposing of it in a landfill? She's imagining a situation where samples have been sent away to a lab and she's still waiting for the test results to come back. Most state game agencies have a page on their website that outlines best practices for deer carcass disposal. I reviewed several of these, and they all say pretty much the same thing. The ideal scenario would be to dispose of the brain, eyes, spleen, lymph glands, and spinal cord materials at the kill site. That ensures that if the animal were to have CWD, the densest areas of CWD prions, brain, spleen, lymph glands, spinal cord, all remain at that kill site. If the entire animal is taken away from the kill site, then, yeah, Anna, I'd agree with you, you are transporting CWD. Those parts I just mentioned should be bagged up and taken to a landfill if you've already transported the animal. The worst thing you could do is take those parts to a new site and distribute them on the open ground. Another email caught my eye from listener Sean Miller. If you're a Kansas resident and a whitetail hunter, that might sound familiar. Sean was quoted in several national outdoor media outlets as opposing the new ban on trail cams recently passed by the Game Commission. The ban applies to all types of game cameras on all public land in the state. Sean said at the commission meeting that he would like to see trail cameras allowed during the summer, but not during the deer or turkey hunting seasons. He said in his email, quote, "The excitement of pulling a camera card is like Christmas in July to me and many others. I would stop short of saying I'm more excited about pulling cameras than I am about hunting, but it's closer than you'd think. I'm sure other hunters feel the same way." Sean thinks trail cameras are a way to keep deer hunters engaged during the off season, and he doesn't buy the idea that a trail cam ban will reduce conflicts between hunters. He points out that public hunting grounds will be packed no matter what, and nothing is going to keep squirrel hunters, deer hunters, and duck hunters from having conflicts. The idea that banning trail cams will keep them from being stolen also doesn't pass the smell test for Sean. He calls that a, quote, "jackass problem, not a camera problem." Boy, that quote's very applicable to a lot of things. The good news for Kansas hunters who want to keep us using trail cams on public land is that, according to Sean, this conversation is not over. He said that even though the final commission vote was unanimous, not all commissioners seemed convinced. Even the chairman, who committed to passing the regulation before the meeting, committed to continued discussion on the issue. Sean said, quote, "While he stopped short of saying changes would be made, he stated there would be discussion about potential amendments to the regs, possibly allowing the trail cameras at certain times of year." Thanks for the update, Sean. The debate about trail cams is far from over, and Kansas is a great example. I encourage Kansas hunters to stay engaged and keep advocating for the policies you believe are right. Thank you so much for listening, and remember to write in to ASKCAL, that's askcal@themeateater.com, and let me know what's going on in your neck of the woods. On top of that, pay special attention to themeateater.com. We are launching our biggest giveaway yet, $20,000 in prizes, plus a home-cooked fancy pants bison dinner cooked by Steven Ranella and possibly several other guests that you may know. So head on over to themeateater.com and find that mega giveaway. opportunity. If you're not into free stuff, that's fine, because you can always head on over to www.steeldealers.com and find that local knowledgeable steel dealer near you. They're going to get you set up with what you need and not try to send you home with what you don't. Thanks again. I'll talk to you next week. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. That's SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. Hey, I just sat down with the owners and operators of Maui Nui Venison. They're on a mission to balance axis deer populations on Maui while giving back to the community and run a totally sustainable operation. For folks like me who want to get your own meat but aren't always successful, you can become a snack subscriber, get some axis deer sticks sent right to your door. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's M-A-U-I-N-U-I. Venison.com and use promo code CAL for 20% off your first order.